106 FM Talk 106.5. Mobile Mornings, glad to have you here on this Thursday. Text lines open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. It's also a Thursday, and that means I look over to my left, right here in studio, my friend Robert Kennedy Jr., Kennedy for Alabama. You check it out on Friday nights, and can we say, your wife and I were talking about how long you could say Happy New Year before, so.
Yes, I think we can go all the way through the end of the month.
Okay, and at that point, no more Happy New Year.
I think it's done.
All right, good.
Maybe there's a little bit of a rule here for when we start Mardi Gras, yeah. So maybe when that first parade rolls, we should cut it off.
Okay, so that's Saturday with La Cruz de Dauphine down on the island, so let me just say a happy early Mardi Gras.
Indeed.
All right, lots going on to talk about here. This is interesting. Coming from the perspective of a Democrat looking at the Senate proceedings, like I am coming at it from a non-Democrat, a conservative angle. I'm not card-carrying for anybody.
You're close.
But the interesting, right now I've been kind of stuck on the which senators are sleeping, which ones are having there's like a whole sideshow to this because it is a long process.
Did I hear you correctly, Dalton, when you said that Senator Cotton had his skim milk?
Skim milk.
That's right. And I didn't know if drinking milk was allowed or not, but it turns out milk and water, the only two beverages.
Can't have coffee.
Now, when the bombshell hits, will he be crying over his spilled milk?
There we go.
And it would be spilled skim milk for Cotton. That's right.
It's a process that even with the most expedited form, if Mitch McConnell wants this done, it's still a couple weeks here of these 12-hour days.
Long days.
And we want to point out, too, like we did earlier in the week, people had, why is it starting so late? I was one of the people who said, why can't they get started in the morning so they're not up so late? That's because Chief Justice John Roberts has got to do his SCOTUS gig before going over there. So if
he's
we're going to be...
He's got to work his day job, huh?
Yeah. If we're going to defer to somebody having a long day, out of all of them, Chief Justice. He's over there at SCOTUS, and then he's there. He's working like 18, 20-hour days.
He is indeed.
So it's, of course, right now we have a lot of what is not surprising to me. We have the managers laying out the case as comes from the House. We have the senators listening to it, not able to respond, not verbally. They can have written questions. And we have moves for rule changes and all that by the Democrats being denied by the Republican majority.
Pretty much along a straight party line vote.
Party line, yeah. Okay. I mean, right. I mean, that, it doesn't surprise me. It's gone down that way.
No, not at this stage.
Okay. So also the president, his attorneys are, he said, doing a great job defending him. He actually wants to be on the front row in the Senate to watch this impeachment proceeding.
Now, that would be interesting if he came over as a spectator.
Yes.
Just adding to the theater that is the process.
So what about this process? I mean, you and I are still probably on the same page that this ends up with no removal of President Trump.
Right. So there's going all the way back to the very first time that we talked about this issue. You may have some folks in the margins who end up moving one way or another, both on the Democratic side as well as the Republican side. But to get to 60, which is the number of senators that you would have in order to convict and remove the president, I don't see it going in that direction, at least at this point in time. I actually think there's a nightmare scenario.
Okay.
And the nightmare scenario is if something comes out that causes four of the Republican caucus to change their mind and actually cross party lines. So you end up where 51 have voted to convict and remove, so it's a majority, but obviously not enough to remove him from office.
Right.
That is the nightmare scenario you'll never be able to recover from.
We'll never be able to recover from how?
No, because then when you have people, think about the conversation we had last week or the week before when we talked about Senator Rand Paul and Senator Mike Lee talking about the War Powers Act and stuff like that. It only takes one or two. Mm-hmm. And if one or two members of the caucus goes against the caucus and says it is enough to cross that bar, then that's all the ammunition that the Democrats need to continue to hit the president with them.
Do you see this? I mean, who are the people that are watching this that will be changing their votes in November? I have a feeling. I'm sure they're out there, obviously, but it seems like so much of the opinion that you see from, or you hear on talk radio, see on social media, I rarely hear people go, oh, well, that was a good point. I'm probably going to change my mind, or that was a good point. I'm changing it back the other way.
I actually think that it happens the same way that I described the nightmare scenario, right? So most people start out with their, if you're looking at this in national polls, it's basically a 50-50 issue.
Right.
Something would have to come out that ends up causing those people on the margin to flip from one side to the other. So the number of people that I think are even going to remember this mm-hmm. on Election Day are fairly small.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know how many other crazy things are going to happen between now and then.
Correct.
But pieces of evidence could come out that cause those people on the margins to change their mind. And that could be enough to flip the election, particularly if there are people coming out of Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, which are states we need.
All right. Well, let's talk about the flip side of this. The senator here in Alabama,
yes.
Doug Jones, and talked about it. And I think maybe he'll be on tomorrow, if not early next week. I've been back and forth with his folks. I'll ask him the same question I've asked him for the last three times he's been on with me. How are you going to vote? And he'll say, well, Sean, I'm going to look at the information. You know, he's an affable guy. He'll talk about it with me, but he'll never come down on one way or another. And he was on CNN the other day mm-hmm. and basically said, well, I still got to look at the same kind of thing. Look at the evidence. But, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it doesn't matter if I vote to remove the president or not, I'll get reelected in Alabama.
I believe the specific quote was, I'm going to win regardless of how I vote.
There mm-hmm. you go. Do you buy that?
Sure.
Really?
Sean,
really?
Come on, man.
You buy that?
I do.
Yeah, because Dalton talked about the story, you know, $1 million of money being spent to influence Senator Jones to vote to not vote to remove President Trump. I'm like,
who's running that super PAC?
I agree, because it does, in my opinion, you and I probably see, well, we do probably see it from different sides of this, but I don't think it matters. I think, because I'm asking this question to, mm-hmm. to Republicans out there, if Senator Jones didn't vote to remove the president. He didn't vote that way. Would you go out and vote for Doug Jones in the general? And I haven't had a Republican yet tell me, yeah, if that happens, I'll do it.
Sure.
So
but let's go.
And if he does, well, let me finish my thought here.
Sure.
If he does the flip side, on the flip side, how many Democrats in the state will say, you had one job,
right?
You had one job and you mm-hmm. didn't do it.
So I actually don't think it matters. And here's the reason why. So if we lined up the senators in the United States Senate on the Democratic side from most liberal to most conservative,
mm-hmm.
where would you say that Senator Jones sits?
By policy votes or by rhetoric? Or
policy votes.
He would be, I'm not going to use that central. He is closer. He is, yeah. He's,
just let it go, Sean. Just let it go. I know
he
you
is
want
closer
to,
no, if we're doing a spectrum, I'm trying to think how we're judging it, 1 to 10 or spectrum.
No, in terms of the ones in the caucus, the 47 Democratic
right.
senators.
So,
and two
but 10's most liberal, 1's most conservative? It's 3.
Okay.
Because Manchin would be 1, I would think.
Right. So if you line them all up, what you would find is that the only person who has a more conservative voting record than Senator Jones is Senator Manchin.
So I'm
he's
great.
The
yeah,
only
that,
one.
That's
right?
one on the list.
And
yeah.
so he and I have actually had this conversation, and I often talk about him as kind of being the last moderate, right?
Yeah.
So if you actually went through and looked at the number of pieces of bipartisan legislation that he has actually gotten through the United States Senate, he and Amy Klobuchar mm-hmm. are actually the two that have done it the most. Now, having said that, when he has voted in alignment with President Trump, it's not like a whole bunch of people are going out and waving flags and giving him credit for having done that.
Right.
It is only when he votes against President Trump.
But don't
right?
it boils down, though, to and I'm into the wonky stuff on policy issues and mm-hmm. per vote, but it comes down to a couple things here in Alabama: Second Amendment rights and mm-hmm. any question of limitation there, and abortion.
Okay.
I mean, that's what people look at it here.
That's
you can
what
say
people
he's
respond
moderate,
to when you're doing a survey.
Sure.
Right? Because that's the thing that gets them spun up.
Well, that's a key important thing for a lot of voters.
So what are you saying? You're saying the vote on
if
the
was
pain
not,
bill was
yeah.
the one that people are going to remember? They're not going to remember that any more than any of the other issues that we talked about. That's the reason why I'm saying it all becomes wallpaper. It all just kind of swirls together. But really getting back to what you chuckled about when you first did, is why it is that he believes that he can win.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at the competition, right? So we had a conversation last week, and we were talking about Representative Burns' campaign ad,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we'll continue the conversation with Senator Sessions, because he's the one who's at the top of the pile right now when he looks at mm-hmm. Who has the best
25,
chance of coming
25, 26%.
Out,
yeah.
Right, coming out of the Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking at his ad. What did he say? It starts out and he says socialism. Okay. And then it's something about radicals on the left and, you know, a typical inflammatory language. Hold on, let me finish. Let me finish. And then it ends with, I'm a fighter, right? Uh-huh. I'm the guy who's got to take it to the Democrats. Uh-huh. I'm like, are you kidding me? Right? The problem that Senator Sessions has is that he sat there literally as a punching bag for the president. So now all of a sudden he's going to be the pillar of strength that I can actually stand up and fight for the things that we need here in Alabama. Come on, man.
Really? Okay.
No chance.
You are absolutely off the rails on this. If you look at the history of Senator Sessions and you look at that history of fighting what is Main Street populism, which, you know, I believe there's a Cyrano de Bergerac moment here where President Trump, then candidate Trump, picked up the planks of the platform laid out by Senator Sessions.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
Okay.
He was Senator fighting Sessions that battle. From a policy standpoint, Senator Sessions was Trump before Trump. There's no doubt about that.
So he was fighting that fight every day. He was you couldn't turn on cable news of any sort, and there was Senator Sessions in the rotunda talking about these Main Street populist, blue-collar populist values that have benefited and obviously are popular in a state like Alabama, where President Trump has his highest popularity numbers. So he was doing that day in and day out and fighting for that day in, day out.
But
he was fighting Republicans.
You're trying to connect something that can't be connected.
It can be connected.
He was a punching bag for the president.
He was not
kicked by the president.
Is the president, we can talk about that, but is the president a Democrat?
Doesn't matter.
It does, because you said that him saying he's going to take the fight to the Democrats is laughable because he was a punching bag for the president. You're apples and oranges.
No, it doesn't matter.
It does matter.
When you talk about an internally consistent political science argument that we could have in a debate and you're trying to win on points, I'd concede that all day long. But the fact of the matter is, you know that when you look at an independent a person and you determine whether or not that person has strength, when somebody challenges them, whether they're on the opposite side of the aisle or whether they're on the same side of the aisle, if you are the punching bag and simply take that incoming and don't stand up for yourself and basically say, I'm going to go chop the guy in the throat, then you're going to look weak. And that's something you can't recover from. And you know I'm right.
I think you're completely wrong. And I would point out the fact that you could go one argument and say, if they're back to what you agreed, that the planks of the platform, the ideas of Jeff Sessions were picked up by Donald Trump.
No doubt. I'll concede
that. Then the vessel that is taking your ideas and doing something with them in the executive branch is the person punching. If you're going to punch back, you're punching back in a way to derail somebody who is taking your ideas and implementing them.
What happens when the president does something that directly challenges Senator Sessions' ideal and then comes in direct conflict to what's best for Alabama? Can he stand up to the president? The answer is no, because he was right to recuse himself in that situation. There's no doubt about that. And in that situation, when he was right, he couldn't stand up for himself. That's the reason why Doug
He was the more mature of anybody who could have been in that position and realized the republic and his ideas were more important than a petty back and forth grade school, playground back and forth with the president. I think he showed a level of maturity you wouldn't find in 99% of the politicians out there.
You're equating maturity with perceived weakness, and that's a problem.
Nah, you're equating perceived weakness with maturity.
Okay.
Coming right back.
That seemed weird.
Yeah, well, but follow it through. We're coming right back. Robert Kennedy Jr., our guest, right here on Mobile Mornings. Text lines open at 343-0106. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Our guest, Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio. Somebody saying here, best show ever between you and I. Also, this person said they've never agreed with anything you said except when it comes to Jeff Sessions. So that a sampling of some of the, there's a whole bunch of text.
I'm liking the best show ever.
Yeah, so there we go. Let's talk a little more of the subject that I well, not only did we say dominated the news cycle last year, the voters in our Alabamian of the Year said it, and that was the I-10 Mobile River Bridge Project.
Mm-hmm. No tolls.
The biggest story of the year last year. Yesterday, MPO met in on the Eastern Shore and in Mobile to talk about a couple of things. They said they had nothing on their agenda, but they had a presentation brought to both of them about this North Bay Express.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a, the way I understand it, not acting to be an expert here, but it's an expressway comes off at Virginia Street from the west side and goes over to be seen somewhere.
Is this the bridge with no exits?
Yes.
Am I understanding that correctly?
And of course, there's an issue here about there not being an exit at 35, which is the Spanish Fort Daphne thing, but that's
right.
So that's part of it. You think, and then this would be separate from I-10. So it wouldn't be, even if it did have a toll, and they're saying they're trying to keep it without a toll,
right?
It would be a choice.
Of course, this is interesting, right? Because you would think that in the original set of options, there would have been an option for something like this. So when we started
talking, we would think a lot of things that we didn't see.
Right. I think that you were on this one fairly early relative to some other folks who were on air. And really what it came down to was they were attempting to toll old infrastructure, right? And so the whole thing spun off the rails because of that focus on old infrastructure.
That was my one issue.
Right. But if they come up with new infrastructure, then it becomes akin to some of the things that we see in other parts of the country, that if you wanted to do something that's a little faster and you're willing to pay for it, so be it. But you still have the old infrastructure that exists.
To me, that seems like so logical that it must be failed somewhere in other people's thought. Because I still don't know if we can afford to do that thing, but if you take the route that's already there that we've been paying for with tax dollars that's currently an interstate, you can still do that, or you can treat yourself, basically, and pay the toll and take the faster way, then it's a choice.
Absolutely, and you're not being compelled to do anything. And I actually think this is funny. I think you and I talked about this off-air once before. Last year, right during the holiday period, I had to go up to New Jersey for a potential consulting engagement, and I was driving down the Garden State Parkway at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And the absolute worst day that we have here when we're trying to head down to the beach is like very, very quick relative to driving down the Garden State Parkway of the New Jersey Turnpike. So
hey, let's cut that distance in half. Let's you and I go to Atlanta this weekend.
Oh, my gosh.
That traffic is stupid.
Absolutely.
So I get that. I mean, I am a
It's homer. All relative.
I'm a homer, and I'm one who's a champion for our home. But I am not going to be a liar or ignorant and say other issues, other metro areas don't have big traffic issues.
Right.
They do. But this is I-10. It's an interstate. You can make the argument about military being able to move on the interstate too. Eisenhower's original plan, all those things, and the pinch point here. Also, self-serving for our area, but maybe important to other states in the country, and that is the deepening and widening of the port and the additional traffic coming in and the Amazon Sortation Center and Walmart and all these things that require these big ships to come in and be able to take a lot of stuff east, you know, and do distribution. So I have a perspective where I want to fight and claw to get what we can that's not paid for on the backs of just people in Mobile and Baldwin counties.
Well, especially when you look at what happened with, 5920? Is that was the one that was up in Birmingham that just
had
got
the big ribbon cutting
with the $15 million bonus to the contractor for starting early. And so there were no tolls that were part of that. So I think our entering argument of we need more infrastructure, and thank goodness this is not a partisan issue.
Right.
So whether you're on the left or the right, everyone consistently in the delegation supports this, as they do the deepening and widening of the port. It's definitely something that would be good for us to be able to get without a toll.
All right. And we'll watch as this moves on. Remind folks, too, tomorrow night. And two things. First of all, let's talk about the debate real quickly. We have about a minute.
Sure. February 6th. Thursday night at 6 o'clock p.m., we will be doing the Democratic candidate debate for the AL1 congressional seat. That will be at Gulf Quest, and it will air live on WKRG News 5 and right here at FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so that's coming up, and we'll talk more about that going forward. And then tomorrow night, Kennedy for Alabama.
Tomorrow night, Kennedy for Alabama is going to be a really, really exciting show. We're actually going to have in one of my Naval Academy classmates, Stephen Phillips, who is an expert on military operations in the Arabian Gulf. He's actually doing his PhD studies here.
Oh, wow.
And so, whereas typically we're talking left, right, and debating issues, this is one of the shows that's going to be focusing on understanding the issues going all the way back to the tanker wars that were happening there in the mid-'80s.
Oh,
so
I'm,
we're very, really excited about having
I'm pre-fascinated. Is that a word? I'm ready for tomorrow night's show. I love that stuff. Hey, will you dish any dirt from your days at the Academy?
There was no dirt.
Of course there wasn't.
Speaking of perfect performance.
Love it. Thank you, man. Have a great weekend.
All right, you guys take care now.
.836 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Let's talk with Louie Arata from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louie.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. You got some great new and pre-owned vehicles on the lot at McConnell. It's a new year, 2020, but the same great McConnell Automotive. Tell us what's going on.
That's right. Just want to throw out a little bit. You know, we talk about all the inventory and all this. Just want to thank everybody for having a great, successful 2019. Hope 2020 brings the same stuff. We've got inventory, plenty of used vehicles certified, where you get the extra 12-12 on the warranty, plus it bumps that powertrain up to 100,000 miles, which is great now. Also, don't forget about our new cars. And check all the stuff online at McConnellAuto.com or give us a call at 251-476-4141.
And before we let you go, the body shop there at McConnell Automotive is also great.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Gary and his guys back there, man, they're first class. They'll take care of all your insurance claims. And anything you need to do, just give them a buzz back there.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
Louie Arata, you can go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
All right, to 8:37, and it is a Thursday, and we have the triple play of Rob Roberts and Bobby's on Thursday. And here it is. The cap off, the main attraction, our buddy Rob Holbert from Landyap. How do you like that?
Was
that
or
bat and cleanup? Yeah, but however you want to spin this thing, we can do it that way.
Hey, man, like to spin it whatever way makes me look good. That's really
I heard a reaction. I have yet to finish the newest Landyap, but I heard, and so I want to get this from both of y'all's perspectives, Rob, because I heard you and Dalton during the break talking about the report on group homes that's in the new Landyap. What we kind of break it down for me? What are we talking about here?
Well, I mean, this is it's one of those sort of, I guess, unintended consequences of shutting down Searcy, for one thing. That's a big part of it. The state mental home, mental hospital. So this has happened all over the country, is that group homes have sprung up in to fill in the gaps for the lessening of governmental agencies. You know, when you lose these hospitals and things like that. So we've had a lot of group homes, basically places where people can go who have addictions, who have developmental problems, who have psychological issues, those types of things. But also we've had, and those are, a lot of those are regulated, but then we've also had the rise of unregulated group homes as well, which are unlicensed, uninspected, unregulated, and basically they call them boarding homes, but and what Jason's been writing about this some last year, and one of the ladies who's running a bunch of them around here, Miyoshi Nelson Williams, she was indicted last month indicted on some the accusations that she was trying to defraud the Social Security Administration and about $300,000. And so, but really what it gets down to is how she's running these houses. And man, the story is just kind of amazing. We've talked to some folks who live there, people who work in these houses, and it's just it's unreal. The way that some of these people are living.
Now, you pointed this out too earlier. This all came from, and if I remember correctly, this was maybe the first term of former Governor Bentley when the state started pulling money out of those facilities, right? You mentioned Searcy, but it happened at other facilities around the state.
Yeah, it really, yeah. So a lot of these people, you know, a lot of these folks are, you know, they're developmentally disabled, mentally ill, substance addicted patients, folks who, a lot of people who probably would have, you know, if you have somebody here, for instance, you know, we always talk about people who maybe need to be committed, but there's really a lack of ability to do that in this state at this point. And a lot of these people end up in group homes. Some of the people who've committed some pretty atrocious crimes around here in the last couple of years have been in group homes and just basically walked out of those homes and done, you know, attacked people and done other things that we've reported on. So there's it's been an issue of, you know, where do you send people? You know, when you see people committing crimes, they end up in the jail system, of course, for some period of time, but then they can't be there for, you know, they can only be there a certain amount of time, and they get out. Often they're put in a group home. And, you know, that's where a lot of this comes from. You know, a lot of the folks that are there are people who are just folks who don't have anywhere to go. Nobody can take care of them. They don't have family members who can take care of them and who are in need of constant supervision, you know, either just medical supervision, or they need medication to help with their mental problems, with issues they have. And it's just really, you get into these homes being unregulated, and it kind of gets into the whole area of, well, they're only as good as the person running them wants them to be. And so, you know, we talked to people who were working there, you know, basically somebody making $8 an hour that's, you know, trying to be a nurse, essentially, to folks, you know, and maybe in a house, maybe 6-7 people in a home. It's pretty intense, and you know, we've been covering this for a while, but this story, it really kind of lays it out there pretty harsh.
Yeah, this cover story, some great journalism from Jason, and the story, the picture he paints with this person who lived at the group home, John Denson. I mean, just brutal, yeah. And sad. And I don't see how someone running the group home could leave the conditions like this. And I really encourage anyone out there to read this, just to see what kind of conditions some of these people were living in.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, you're talking about they're paying, you know, $700 a month to be there. They're basically turning over all of their any of their food stamp money, any of that kind of stuff is being turned over to the people that are running it. You know, they're we've got pictures of there in here with, you know, there's padlocks on the refrigerator. They basically take their, you know, buy their food for them and bring some food back. And you know, they allege that essentially they were being underfed, that they were basically just, you know, getting a little bit of food a day. They lock everything up. They, you know, supposed to have 24-hour care. The people leave at, you know, 5 or 6 in the evening, and nobody's there to take care of them for the rest of the evening. People just sitting in filth for, you know, hours and hours. It's pretty horrific.
All right. Look at that in the new Lanyap. And I remind folks, too, they want to pick up a copy more than one way. I mean, they can do it in the real world. They can do it online as well.
Yeah, they can get out there and walk out and get their steps in and pick up a Lanyap for free out of one of our regal purple boxes or the few remaining hideous pink boxes. Or you can go online to lanyapmobile.com, sign up, become a subscriber, and read all this fantastic journalism and get all of our... I've counted last week, Sean, it was like 37 stories last week for $1.50 a week. You know, that's good value. That's...
It broke down
to like 4 cents a story.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was wondering. I was wondering what the cent per story.
Yeah, it's 4 cents a story. It's there. You know,
if you evenly distribute it, but I would say some stories might be like 7 cent stories, and some might be 2 cents.
That might be a 6 cent story right there. You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, you know, it helps us. It really does help us do good journalism. It helps us keep rocking and rolling and doing the kinds of things that we need in this community. So it's we always encourage everybody to do that, and it helps with convenience. Plus, there's breaking news all week long.
And when we come back, we'll talk about one of the situations where Lanyap is the story in Lanyap. We'll let Rob explain when we come back. Y'all stay close. Hey, thank you, Kane. 848 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. This segment of the show brought to you by The Maids. I'd like you to call and get that free estimate now at 344-6626. We've been working with The Maids since October, and what a change in lifestyle it's been. Okay, you get a clean house, but you get the time back in your schedule. I had that stat that showed, I think for average Americans, we spend over 2 years of our lives cleaning up at the house. 2 years. How about you get the time back in your schedule? Give yourself the gift of clean, that beautiful clean house that you get with the maids, and the gift of time. More time to do what you do well, make money, or spend time with family, friends, enjoy a hobby, whatever it is. Give yourself the gift of clean and the gift of time when you have the maids work at your home. Get the free estimate by calling 344-6626, 344-6626. You can Google the maids from Mobile and Baldwin County, and you'll get the phone number, 344-6626. These are the people we use in our home, and I'd like you to give them a shot. See what they can do for you. Get a free estimate, 344-6626 for the maids. All right, continue our conversation with Rob Hulbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And let's talk the story here about judicial power in Baldwin County and Lanyap. And can you help those of us that have heard just bits and pieces of this? What are you talking about here? What's going on?
Well, you know, Sean, I mean, as I'm sure you are, I'm a firm believer in the First Amendment, and you know, we work in the field where we have to really we have to have the freedom of the press, and we need the freedoms we have. That story I'm telling you about earlier, the group homes, you know, there are people calling us and telling us about these things, and some of these people speak off the record, you know, and that's how newspapers get a lot of information. What is going on in Baldwin is that there is a personal injury case going on involving McSherry, the owner of McSherry's pub over there, who he pushed a woman off a stool. He was convicted of it, but now he's being sued civilly. And you know, it's just it's a personal injury case. You know, that's the sum total of it. But somehow or another, the lawyer decided to start alleging some massive conspiracy between Lanyap and the mayor of Fairhope and a couple of bloggers and a couple of attorneys to do something or another to ruin Mr. McSherry. And, you know, which is, okay, judicial, I mean, that's, you know, typical lawyer smoke and mirrors, that kind of stuff. But the judge allowed this guy to subpoena us and wanted a year's worth of our communications with all these various people that he thinks that we're involved in a conspiracy with, which nobody allows that. That is, I mean, that's just the standard. There are shield laws in every state in the country, and the federal government has a shield law as well, that we don't have to turn those things over, because that way people can call and say, hey, do you know that this is going on? And we can't be subpoenaed and have to turn it over and say, well, yeah, Sean called us and he told us this was happening, because that's how you get information, and we have to go verify that information.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, what's your responsibility if you have somebody who's going to be shielded for their identity? And I mean, we think about this the whole way to the federal level. You're going to shield their identity, but what's to say that person's not just grinding an axe out there, has made something up?
You've got to do the work. You know, you can't. All those things are primarily people call up and say, hey, this is going on. You know, I always tell them, okay, well, we got to verify whatever you say. So if you can't give us any information that I can verify, then the story's going nowhere. You know, and sometimes people provide records and things like that we can then verify that those records are correct, and you know, that they're real and they're not photoshopped and that kind of thing. But that's what journalists do. It's really an important part of what we do. And there's nobody who's ever in this state has ever ruled against the shield law until last week. And this judge said, well, you know, I think he basically said, look, we're going to allow the shield law to be in place. We'll quash, as they say, quash the part of the subpoena asking for things that relate to stuff you have published already, to stories that you've already written. But the lawyer should be able to see anything that you haven't written about.
You haven't?
It makes no sense. How does something we haven't written about have any effect? Number one, again, we go back to this. This is a personal injury story. Even if there was this grandiose conspiracy, it doesn't affect whether this guy pushed her off a stool and hurt her head. But number two, it's like, so we're talking about stuff we haven't published and we're supposed to turn it over to them. This is a misreading of the law, and I think it's just a big effort over there to push back at us for a lot of the investigative reporting we're doing. That's, you know, Judge Clark Stankowski's, it's his courtroom. you know, there's a lot of strange stuff going on in that case. We reported the fact that the judge actually called up and asked another judge to have this case. And there's, you know, there's a writ of mandamus that's been filed because the judge's been making rulings and issuing orders without having hearings, and so he's having to answer that to the Supreme Court. There's a lot of strange stuff going on in this case, and now it's, you know, it's turned into this thing where they're treating it like it's some sort of defamation case, and it's not.
Well, okay, and that's kind of, this is a simplistic, you know, maybe a simpleton's question here I'm going to ask you, but it's mine. You know, people say, I got the right to face my accuser, right?
Right.
And so what about that?
But the point of it is this case is about it. This is not a defamation case, John. This is taking an injury case and saying, oh, by the way, these people are saying bad things about this guy, and how does that affect this case? You know, it's really getting far afield. I mean, if it was something where the guy was in a criminal case and said that the coverage and, you know, the mayor had been involved and the coverage had tainted the jury, that may make more sense, but this is just kind of out there. It doesn't make any sense.
Now, but you are being compelled to provide information here with the source.
If we have any such information, if there's anything that we didn't use.
That's the one that gets me.
So we have any of that. But the point being is just that the judge is ruling that way, which makes it a situation where we have to hire lawyers. We have to go to court. We waste our time. We waste our money. It's a harassment.
So where's the what's the next step on this? When's the next date?
I think the next step on it is whether we determine if we have anything that would fit that. But, you know, again, if it's a situation where we, you know, if somebody knows that we've been doing reporting on something and asking questions about it in this courtroom, that person could subpoena us and ask for those records to see what people have been saying, you know, what we've learned so far, because if we haven't printed it yet, then in his ruling, it's all fair game. So, you know, we wrote a story, it took 2 years to get together. So if they knew for 2 years, which they did, that we were asking questions about it, they could subpoena and ask, who have you been talking to?
And then you would be compelled to...
Yes, according to that judge. Of course, we would have to fight that, and we'd have to go to... You know, we'd appeal it, and hopefully some people who understand the law would rule and say, no, that's not how it works. But again, it's money, it's time. You know, we're a small company. We're not the New York Times. We don't have lawyers on staff and that kind of stuff. These types of things are just, they're harassments is what they are. And I think that we've definitely pushed some buttons over in Baldwin, doing a lot of reporting over there. And, you know, I think there's some hurt feelings.
Y'all's take on this is that this is not even specific to this case, but this is a retribution for reporting that's being done by Lanyap?
Yeah, it is. It has to be. I mean, there's nothing else to it. This doesn't involve anything in the case. This is a personal injury case. You know, they're trying to turn it into some sort of a defamation case that doesn't exist, and it's bizarre. It is, you know, it is a strange, strange case, and you know, nobody in 100 years, this law has been on the books for more than 100 years, and the judge is the first guy in this length of time to read the law this way.
There it is. Rob Hulbert, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. Remind folks, they want to pick up a copy. A lot of people probably going, what all? I got to see all this. Where do they get it?
You got to check it out, guys. It's worth reading. You know, go out online at lanyapmobile.com and check it out there. You can pick us up in our pink and purple boxes.
All right. Very good, Rob. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Y'all have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend as well. Rob Hulbert checking in from Lanyap. And we're out for 3 hours. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Run through of the schedule for Midday Mobile today. So Robert McGee, Porch Band of Greek Indians, noon to 12:30 to talk about this compact they're offering for gaming in the state of Alabama. They're offering to the state $1 billion worth. Plus, Senator Jeff Sessions, candidate for Senate. Yeah, he's going to join us at 12:30. We're talking bridge with Dr. Lou and Kevin Spriggs, and Garrett Williamson joins us all straight ahead.